Time for another chat with State Representative Tacky Chand of Quincy for our weekly Tacky Talks. How you doing, Tacky?
I'm doing good today, Joe. It's good to see you for another week as we're closing in on the new norm.
Yeah, we're recording this Friday, May 28th, just the day before most of the COVID restrictions here in Massachusetts are going to be lifted. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I think fairly confident that right now, the May 24th reported vaccination shows that 62% of all eligible people to get vaccinated have been vaccinated. The news media is reporting 51%, but that's against the entire population. So I think people need to understand there's actually two figures. One is the percentage of eligible people to be vaccinated, and one is all people being vaccinated. Obviously, a lot of us know that children, I believe, under age 12 are not eligible for vaccination. Given the pace of the FDA's emergency reviews, it wouldn't surprise me that children are eligible for vaccination by the school season beginning in the fall. But the key is that the governor was targeting early on just adults, people over age 18, to have 70% herd immunity for just adults. And the chart I saw showed that teenagers are still working up because they're the most recent ones to be opened up to.
Right.
So it's going to take some time for that to grow a number. But in terms of everybody over the age of 60, you know, we're talking like, you know, mid to high 90 vaccination rate percentage wise. And everybody under that age, you know, is definitely into the high 50s, low 60s, depending on which bracket you're in vaccination rate. So, you know, but we are, you know, we're much further along than I ever expected. I'll be frank with you. I've said this more than once now, because it's a decentralized healthcare system we have. We don't have a state-controlled healthcare system. We don't have a state mandate. It is voluntary. And of course, you know, early on, there was not a vaccine. And, you know, I was getting those constituent calls about why can't I get vaccine? And now we have an overabundance of vaccine, which we expected eventually happen. And now we're in remarkably good shape. So the governor, I think, is going to be right. By mid-June, we may have all eligible adults at 70% herd immunity. That is realistic.
It's remarkable. It really is, given where we were, as you say, just a short time ago, even 6 months ago, the way things have changed, and really the rocky start to the vaccine rollout that you mentioned didn't bode well, but it really has seemed to have turned completely around 180 degrees now.
Agreed. And that makes the reopening a little more comfortable locally. I mean, I would be less confident in a vaccination state where they only had less than 40% of eligible people, which actually still is a lot of states out there, various population sizes and even varying density. So there are some, you know, mathematical challenges if you're in a not densely populated area, getting vaccine to community health centers or community hospitals that are 100, 150, 200 miles away from each other.
Yeah.
There is a logistical challenge in those things. I think people in Massachusetts, particularly the eastern side of the state where we live in higher density, there is more opportunity to get vaccinations, yep, particularly now of abundance. I do think in other parts of the country where it's less sparsely populated, healthcare systems are further apart, you know, there'll be some different challenges, of course. But reopening seems vastly more comfortable as we head towards that 70, probably 75% vaccination of eligible persons. I would be less comfortable if I was a state where only 30% of eligible persons were not vaccinated, were vaccinated.
Another, you know, big part of the story is the lifting of the state of emergency on June 15th and what that means going forward for things like outdoor dining, takeout alcohol, public meeting quorums, things of that nature. I know there's some legislation mulling about with regards to those.
Yeah, the governor realized, I think his legal team, we talked about this last week, I think the legal team realized the thing I had a question about is whether the governor can maintain powers to suspend certain general laws under the Wall Powers Act. And I think they came to the conclusion that once the wall power ends under state of emergency, all those so-called extensions he put in those executive orders really have no strength. And as a result, he needed to file legislation, particularly in three areas that is currently functioning well, which is the open meeting law, mm-hmm, by virtual, which not just your school committees or city council, but also administrative agencies. as has been done a lot of this type of open meeting law stuff through virtual. So like, for example, I oversee the board's registration. A lot of meetings were actually pretty well done through this medium.
Yep.
I wouldn't say every meeting, but, you know, a lot of them were pretty good. And then, you know, we have outdoor dining, which is set to expire as well. He is recommending, I'm sorry, the first one, he wants to keep the open meeting law change to September. He wants to keep outdoor dining available to the end of November.
Yeah.
And then he wants to keep consumer protections on improper COVID-19 billing. But no, he wants to definitely extend. That makes a lot of sense in the COVID billing section, because people will be, you know, getting charged for things they're not supposed to charge for. They're supposed to be covered by insurance or federal money.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense. But since the emergency powers have ended, they are not, they're not going to be valid. So we actually have a very short time frame in the legislature by June 15th to have this resolved. And one of the interesting things about this is you filed three different non-related topic matters into a single bill.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So
you support one, you support them all, or vice versa?
Question is what committee it goes to.
Yeah.
So for those listening, if you do an open meeting law issue, that belongs to the Joint Committee on State Administration. Outdoor dining can be either my committee, Consumer Protection for Industrial Licensure, or municipalities and regional government.
Oh, okay.
But most likely it'll come to me. And then you have the consumer protection issue on healthcare and the COVID-19 billing. That should really go to healthcare finance, public health, because that's kind of an insurance / healthcare billing issue. So those two committees would have oversight on that matter. So, and maybe even financial services would have oversight because it's insurance. So there, I think there's going to be some need to be worked out between the House and Senate. If they're going to send to one committee and have multiple chairs weigh into that one committee and we'll do the redrafting there, or they're going to do a joint committee recommendation where they assign multiple committees with a specific assignment to each part of the bill. We treat it as if it's not in my committee, but we have a hearing as if it was.
Yeah, I'm sure the intent is to try and get it passed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think we can move pretty quickly. There is as you guys can hear, listen, it seems like, oh, this is kind of like red tape in the State House, but there are rules to how this place operates. And committees have jurisdictions of certain public policies that we're in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
And a committee that's not equipped with the staff or the chairs to oversee that policy, generally is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Do you support the measures, Jackie?
Yes, most definitely. Outdoor dining has been widely popular. My staff has been putting together, myself, and we're sharing the information with our co-chair, as well as some committee members with legal backgrounds to understand what I'm talking about, to create a new expedited process for outdoor dining so you don't have to wait 40 odd days of notifications and application and all that stuff. But we want to maintain everyone's legal rights to object. They want to maintain people's legal rights to appeal. So, I'm proposing a 5-day expedited review process of outdoor dining for local licensing boards. Many of the municipalities will get applications starting in their late winter.
Yep.
To do so. And, to me, a 5-day period to do a whole public notice to approval process seems very reasonable in my mind. As well, maintaining an applicant's rejection. If you've been rejected, you have the ability to appeal to the ABCC. The governor's executive order actually suspended pretty much all the public notices. I don't think people realize that.
That's right. Yeah, they happened instantly. There was no public notice. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were in a butter and you didn't like what was going on, you really had nothing you could do about making your voice heard. Right. And I found that very troubling from my standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You should at least have your voice heard. So given the fact that we've had one season last year and we have a new season now of outdoor dining, I think when if I do an expedited process and people in the public can weigh in on actual experience, not like, oh, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. I mean, you now live with it.
Yeah.
You can weigh in with your local licensing board about what you did and did not like about the actual experience this time. Not, you know, if you go to any public hearing, it's always like, well, this could potentially happen, that could potentially happen. Well, now we know. And, as a citizen of the or resident of the municipality, you can actually speak from personal experience now about whether this is a good or bad idea.
Yeah.
Open meaning law is pretty easy. Consumer protection is pretty easy. We've got some questions about takeout alcohol continuing. Yep. That is a quirky situation where we include in the economic development bill takeout beverages until February 15th or the end of the state of emergency, which is June 15th now. So when the state of emergency comes, so will takeout alcohol end.
Okay. I don't think that's as controversial, even for a restaurant owner's point of view. They want folks to come in and spend money in the restaurant.
Yeah, I've been hearing a little bit from folks about the certain economic models that it may make sense in. But the general feeling, I've talked to folks, and I've not talked to all my community members yet. I'm still in the process of calling them. It takes time to call a lot of people. And beginning a lot of phone calls from other folks too. That you want people to dine in, and it was most apparent when even we had limited open dining, mm-hmm. the interest in takeout alcohol dropped dramatically.
Yeah.
Once any kind of open dining, we talked about this a lot about the fact that it was a tip based economy. I know there's a workforce shortage, folks. I mean, there's a talk about that, but still, people have gone back to work. It's a tip based economy, mm-hmm. and we could debate about my ideas about that. But I think it's very important for people who have some means. That are willing to feel safe dining in, give a little extra if you can to the staff,
yep.
Who really had a lot of concerns about working. They're front facing, they meet more people than you're going to meet passing through a restaurant. And some of these folks have to take public transportation to get to work, which is a bit of a peril, as we all know, trapped inside a bus or a train from other folks. And you got the comfort level of safety. And, I do believe that certain folks have moved on to other jobs because of personal safety fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I know several myself that have done that. Yeah.
Yeah. And people have, people are not young and they may have other pre-existing health conditions. And even with vaccination, you're not 100% immune.
Right.
So you need to, weigh your personal safety as part of your occupation.
One thing I know the governor does not want to continue is the cap on fees that these delivery apps charge, Grubhub and a bunch of the other ones.
Yeah, that should normalize. Again, all of us were getting gouged by delivering services. Let's just call it what it is. It's a market force issue. They have limited drivers. They have the delivery services widespread. And they have, frankly, during the lockdown, they had basically a monopoly and capitalism rules, and they're able to charge what they want. With restaurants opening up and people have a strong desire to, again, continue to support their local businesses and, have a different experience than, eating at home, I think that the market will take care of itself over time.
Charge too much and they won't use you anymore, basically.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the market should take care of itself.
Okay.
We will reevaluate the issue as we continue into the summer. But, this is the start of Memorial Day weekend. I know it's a little cloudy. I understand it's going to rain a bit this weekend. But, I do expect the restaurants have a very, very strong Memorial Day weekend because it's going to be hard to barbecue, guys.
That's right. And people are sick of cooking at home.
Look, I mean, we've talked about my cooking. We should really just give you a bunch of tacky cooking pictures.
That could be a whole separate show, Tacky. Yeah, Tacky in the kitchen.
Tacky teaching you how to cook.
I hope you have a microwave.
I have a lot of gadgets now. A lot of new things I've always wanted and actually decided to buy it for the first time. I didn't go too crazy. I have friends that made themselves into a commercial kitchen. It feels like the amount of stuff they bought. I expect the restaurant season to be very strong. I truly believe that people want to support their local businesses. I really do. And I hope people are patient with their local businesses too, because, there is a staffing issue, but also I think every business will make their own conscious decision about health and safety of their employees and their customers. They may continue to wear masks. They may have partitions up still.
It does them no good to have their staff or customers get sick.
And I think there's a degree of safety. I think all of us want to feel safe. I know that, we don't need to wear these things starting this weekend, but, people should feel safe. And I think that's crucial for economy to move forward. If they don't feel safe and comfortable, they're not inclined to venture out to spend money on brick and mortar and support our local business owners. So, I always ask, look, the governor's correct. You've got people who wear masks, and I may be doing it myself every so often, depending on my fear level of where I go into. Let's call it what it is, folks. It's fear. You shouldn't make fun of folks like that.
I mean, right.
You don't know what their pre-existing health condition is.
Yep.
You don't know what their comfort level is. In my cases, I said more than once, I have a mom with cancer. I promise you, she's going to be wearing this mask, still continue wearing masks as this vaccinations roll out. And then, you got store owners that probably and hopefully actually will continue to have heavy sanitation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hygiene. And if they have those hand sanitizers available, well, we should partake.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain people that can't get vaccinated for various reasons. Folks may have somebody at home that's immunocompromised like yourself. A variety of reasons, you never really should assume.
Exactly it. And people should be very understanding about that and not have these altercations to see on the evening news that people are just jerks. I mean, about how they treat other folks. And if you go to an establishment, they have the partitions up or they have hand sanitizer available. I mean, that's the safety of you as a customer and safety for them as your retailer or service provider.
Yeah. So, if you don't like their policies, you don't have to patronize them.
That's correct. But, I do ask that people be respectful of business as well regarding how they handle the business. And to also support them, you may not agree, but please do support them, not because you disagree, but because, they're not looking to hurt you. They're just trying to protect everybody.
Yeah. No, I do want to ask you, Jackie, I don't know if you want to get into it or not, is the discussion around the origins of COVID-19 at the federal level, what's going on right now, and your concern about how that might impact what's happened to the Asian community because of it.
Yeah, I do have some interesting observations on that. I've been watching, as you all know, I watch a lot of international channels now that have English-speaking channels that is, by the way, not state-controlled by a foreign government. There's a lot of them out there, if you look carefully, who actually runs those stations. And there is a lot of concern by the World Health Organization regarding sufficient access from the Chinese government about the origins of which. And there is no evidence of a lab-created bioweapon, okay, folks? I mean, it's pretty much accepted this as an airborne transmission through another mammal. That seems to be a fairly good consensus. The real question is, when did they know? And why didn't do anything about it? That's really the question now. There's some inquiries about one of the labs. They have their own version of CDC. Everybody has one. And actually, the Wuhan one actually was partially paid for by the federal government in the U.S. to address SARS.
No.
Because that was how bad it was. That it really was an international effort to, because SARS escapes out of the region. It really, it's not as bad as COVID in terms of death count, but it's equally pandemic worthy. So, the question was, what did they have in their lab when they were studying this, and what did they really know and when?
Mm.
And then I do have concerns about the Indian variant.
Yes.
Because there's been about the impact on the Asian community, especially the Chinese community, regarding a lot of the anti-hate issues and anti-Asian issues. Anti-hate doesn't make sense. The anti-Asian issues. We talked about the fact that, Asian American history in the U.S. has not been kind to Asian Americans. If you do look into it, and I do ask that people do, there's this constant term, Indian variant, may have also an adverse effect on the Indian community in this country. And, there will rise in incidences against them as rapidly as the Chinese, but time will tell to see how that unfolds. It's going to be some time, I think, of the various global health organizations investigating this, including the U.S., including the EU, including the UN, and many others, trying to get to the source of who knew what, when, how, and was the response adequate. And that's going to take some time. And if you watch news, one of the big challenges globally is how to deal with public relations. We've seen it here in our country regarding the Trump administration and now with the Biden administration about how they communicate COVID-19. it's not uniquely a U.S. problem.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to be a very global problem how to do it. For example, India thought they got through the first wave scot-free through just draconian lockdowns, makes here look tame in terms of. But it seemed they survived the first wave very well as a result. But elections occurred in the second wave. And it's no surprise when they lifted a lot of the restrictions very rapidly and decided to hold full elections in the conventional convention style, where you have big rallies and, you know, you cram your voting locations, and they vote over multiple days in that country because the population is so big. And they actually have like a really high turnout rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you consider it's 1.4 billion people. You know, it's, you know, no surprise this second wave has been brutal. Absolutely brutal on the people of India.
Well, because they did that without having a high vaccination rate.
Yeah, actually, absolutely true. And they are the biggest manufacturing companies of AstraZeneca is in India.
Yeah, how ironic is that? Yeah.
It is very ironic. They're shipping out life-saving drugs to the rest of the world, but none for themselves. And here's a failure of the government, where they should have bought more, being a manufacturing company, country, to try to get first dibs. And they are a major economy. I mean, they're not a small economy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they also practice vaccine diplomacy, which the United States will not do. China, Russia, and India, you know, bought vaccine and made vaccine exclusively to donate to other countries. And the U.S. adopted the method of put your air mask on first on an airplane before you put it on the person next to you, a mentality. And it's going to pay off here, it appears. Hopefully by end of summer, we'll hit some kind of herd immunity status. And then the U.S. Has bought a lot of vaccine, like a lot. And then we'll be able to start helping our neighbors even more around us. And we're going to play some level of vaccine diplomacy, obviously.
Right.
And there's a lot of trust in the vaccines in the U.S. I mean, you know, Moderna, Pfizer, even Johnson & Johnson. I think Novak's coming up this fall for approval.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one more or two more others by the wintertime. And the brand Made in America vaccinations does carry globally.
Yes. Yeah, I think UK just today approved the J&J shot as well. So it's starting, you know, to be more accepted around the world now.
Yeah. And my family in Hong Kong tells me they have choice of vaccine. They have the Sinovac in China as well as Moderna and Pfizer. And the preferable choice is the American-made vaccines.
Mm, interesting.
And you know, I know there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy, but you know, other countries are now clamoring desperately, literally to save their lives now, to get their hands vaccine. And you know, I tell people, all you know, the vaccine's a vaccine globally, but there is still this kind of mentality globally that made in America medicine is better.
Yeah. Another big change just announced this week, too, from the Department of Education. Full in-person learning in the fall, no social distancing either.
Yeah, again, this reflects the fact they have an expectation to reach herd immunity. And like I said a little bit earlier, you know, I think the FDA will have emergency use authorization for young children.
Mm-hmm.
I do expect that to happen, given the rapid pace they approve the teenager bracket. So, you know, kids, sorry to tell you this, but, you know, you get to go to school. And I think the positivities of spending time with classmates and in-person learning with teachers is wonderful. But I'm sure, you know, some of these kids think it was an extended snow day all year long. I'm sure some children thought that. But I mean, parents are probably very happy to realize how tough it is to be a teacher and being a working family while teaching at the same time.
Yeah, even snow days in the future are questionable because obviously we've proven that, you know, you can do remote learning if you have to.
That's correct. And now that we have the technology in place and we have methodologies in place, you know, God forbid we have another wave of some, I don't know what anymore. You know, it's just like a horror movie. You just don't know. But I mean, we are actually now better equipped, and I hope people retain the lessons learned from this past 16 or so months on what to do, you know, if we have another major infection. And it may not be a COVID situation. It could be something else. But I will say this. I think I've talked to folks, and I think the data will prove this. This has been probably the healthiest year for non-flu, but not getting the flu other types of coronavirus, which the common code is a COVID virus, coronavirus.
Right.
And, you know, things like the norovirus and other airborne diseases that we've all, I think, experienced once in our lives at this stage. So this seems to be a noticeable benefit for high sanitation and mask wearing.
Yeah, because, you know, at the height of the flu season, what would have been the flu season, there were still no vaccines. The only thing we were doing differently is masking and social distancing. So, you know, if you follow the scientific method, that seems to have worked.
Yeah, and it's logical, right? Because those diseases are also respiratory.
Yeah.
Right. So if you have a mask to keep your, again, keep your germs to yourself, as well as not getting too close to others, which, you know, we've all worked someplace where someone moves away from you as soon as you sneeze because they know what may happen. I think even if you have to go to workplace and you're not feeling all that super, something like this can protect the coworkers immensely. So I hope that people will take these lessons going into this coming winter to keep us, you know, safe and healthy. And, you know, folks, when you're safe and healthy, you can do more things, as we will discover.
That's right, yeah. Jackie, can you explain a little bit about, I know there's a proposal to kind of revamp the Department of Professional Licensure in Massachusetts and what that all entails?
Yeah, the governor filed what's called an Article 87 bill. Under Article 87 of the Constitution, the legislature has 60 days from the day of filing to respond to the governor's request, affirmative or negative. This is not necessarily unusual. Every governor has always wanted to reorganize their administration.
Okay.
Whether it be changing secretariats, making them, abolishing them, moving agencies between secretariats, and so forth. So my committee, the Consumer Protection and Professional Licensure Committee, have been looking into the whole Sex Offender Registry Board non-compliance check. And the conclusion from the committee was that the prior two commissioners really dropped the ball on this.
Okay.
The current commissioner, Leila D'Amelia, she actually came on board 3 weeks or 4 weeks before COVID hit.
So
while she was doing her own internal review, she was now managing a whole other crisis, like every other state agency was managing a crisis. And because a lot of DPO workers are on site, you know, they're inspectors to go out there, plus you have in-house processing. Government buildings do not have social distancing by nature. And of course, we discussed earlier, virtual meetings, but open meeting law for the various boards, right? So, you know, learning to fly all last year. Well, we didn't get a chance to really continue the conversation further with the commissioner because pandemic, and all of us kept shifting priorities around COVID.
Okay.
And one of the things we had been discussing about whether or not the division of license, the division of professional licensure was too heavy, meaning too many agencies. So the governor's made a proposal to move out some of the healthcare-related agencies to a new division called the Division of License. Was it the POL, Division Professional Occupational License? Yes, Professional Occupational License.
Okay.
So things like nutritionists, hearing aid folks, we're going to be moving into that new agency out of the Division of Professional Licensure, and they'll be funded and staffed separately.
I see. Okay.
And that'll take some pressure off the existing division and the commissioner to maximize their resources there, because we also came to the conclusion they were badly underfunded for the volume work they were doing. One of the tricks, as you guys are going to learn from hearing from me about government, is that they always, quote unquote, make cost savings for emerging state agencies. What they do is that they create more work for the new agency, but they cut their funding from the previous version, hence so-called cost savings.
Mm.
So they end up understaffed, underfunded, and to do as high as four times as much work prior to merger. And that creates inefficiency at the expense of a cost, for the benefit of a cost saving.
I see.
So obviously you get complaints about poor service suddenly post-merger, and it's like, well, they're trying to do four times as much work with less money, adopting whole new agencies and policies and work they didn't do before, so they learn on the fly. And the Division of Professional Licensure, I've already got to remember, was the Board of Registration was originally called, you know, suffered 20 years plus of my life doing this business of mergers, constantly merging more things in there that, frankly, was quote unquote, we're doing cost savings.
Okay. So, yeah, sacrificing service for the bottom line.
Yeah, and after 20 plus years of doing this, it all came to a head this past couple of years, the negative consequences of it. So finally, the dam overflowed, so to speak, and now we're trying to figure out how to keep it overflowing again.
All right. So 60-day, what's the 60-day mark? Do you know when you found that?
Well, it's a little confusing. There's some debate about whether it's 60 days from admittance or 60 days from filing.
Ah, okay.
But I'm not going to wait 60 days from filing or 60 days from admittance. We're going to hold a public hearing on January 7th on this, June 7th on this bill. And under the Constitution, I have 10 days to issue a report from the day of the public hearing. So from the day of filing or admittance, don't even start me with this argument internally about what this means. You have 30 days to hold a hearing.
Gotcha.
And then after the hearing, you got 10 days to report.
Okay.
In totality, you can't have more than 60 days after that, you know, which essentially means that you have essentially between 20 and 30 days after the hearing to, depending on when the hearing occurs and when the report occurs, for the legislature to take action. So I'll be going to next week. We'll be reviewing this, preparing our questioning for the 7th. And even after the 7th, we got to prepare a recommendation to Speaker's office about this is a good go and not go.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, I'll be preoccupied on top of the normal stuff.
On top of your regular 90 million things that are going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I got 300 some odd bills that we're trying to work out a hearing schedule because we are working virtual still until the fall.
Yeah.
This has been a good opportunity for some housekeeping. They're patching some walls and carpets when we're not there.
Oh, okay.
They can't disturb anybody to do that. And of course, no one's moved offices yet.
Right.
And I was reminded by the good speaker, we have 18 new chairmen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and there's a lot of people moving to their new space where the committees are located and other people moving out. So I'm not moving offices. You can still find me in room 42. Hopefully the building will be open in some capacity to the public this fall. And the, other folks around the buildings will be moving around. So there'll be some disruption and there'll be some new phone numbers for reps and senators. Because they move offices and have to update the website and you have to, you know, business cards and so forth and so forth. Although I don't ever use business cards anymore because we don't see anybody. But it's one of those things, right? So we expect some level of, you know, not your problem, obviously, you know, some internal administrative issues on moving folks around the building.
Yeah.
And we'll probably do that in September. Early September, maybe later August, to get that process started.
Okay.
You know, some variation, hopefully normal this fall. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of like going to a new school for the first time.
I'm fully expecting we have to buy a whole lot of air filtration systems.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Those things are loud. So, pretty.
It's an old building.
Very old building. Don't they love people visiting the state house, but you don't realize how old this building is as you walk inside of it. And it's expensive to maintain a building. You know, the old section was built in 1797. I think the so-called new part of the building is 1895.
Okay.
Something in that range, I think. I get my dates mixed up between the two in terms of the last two digits. Even the new wings were 1914-ish. They were World War I construction. So,
yeah. It's not modern, let's put it that way.
Well, I tell folks, the thing predates modern plumbing.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So you can imagine what they had to do with the building when plumbing came into existence, what they had to do with the building when electricity came into existence, what they had to do with the building when they had to get rid of fireplaces and installed some kind of central heating systems.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, you ever come to the office, it's always like, it's kind of cool, but when you look carefully, it's kind of weird.
Yes, you can't just walk over and turn up the thermostat.
Exactly, and the speaker, you know, his wisdom created a new state committee for state house security for the house side. And COVID-19 is going to be one of those things as part of building security considerations. So be interesting to see what the committee is going to recommend via the speaker's office on safety protocols. And I'll give you a funny one too, because I did stop in the office for a meeting briefly and collect some more stuff to bring home to work on. And my key didn't work. They changed the locks.
Oh.
The door, my key doesn't match the lock in any way, shape, or form. Like,
they try to tell you something, Techie?
I know. Maybe the speakers informed me I'm no longer welcome.
That's right.
So I was standing at the doorway with my key, like, well, huh. So, of course, I reached out to the park ranger. Oddly enough, actually, is a Quincy resident. Informing the situation, contact maintenance to make this folks have the master keys.
Sure. Yeah.
And that was in my office. But it was one of those funny moments. I know we've been gone a long time, but, maybe I'm no longer welcome.
Yeah, that is kind of funny, actually. I found out once years ago that's how I lost my part-time job. I showed up for work. The doors were locked and the key didn't work. I said, oh, I guess I don't work here anymore.
The not-so-subtle hint.
Exactly, yeah. Just easier, I guess, than, a phone call or a letter.
But we will probably keep doing this in this format. I fully expect people who have out-of-staters who do not want to travel to Massachusetts will be requesting this format communication.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of benefits to it, certainly, for students, working students, in college, to take classes online is a huge benefit. I'm sure there's a lot of pluses to it, for sure.
And this recording function, as we all know, and if, I'm doing phone interviews, television interviews, radio interviews, or, helping a student with a project, for example. I do a lot of those, believe it or not. There's a lot of student projects looking to interview elected officials. This kind of format allows them to maintain these recordings as opposed to using a audio recording to do that. It's closed captioning ability of this.
Yep, that's right.
Which is actually not bad.
No, I think different languages are available too, if you're able to do that too.
Yeah, mobile channel for near simulcast ability. I've attended some meetings through that as well, using the simulcast on Zoom public meetings. For example, we did this in the North Quincy utility project where National Grid is replacing a line that's over 45, 48 years old, whatever, and it's end of life. And they did a public meeting through this format, which they were able to do slideshows much more easily and so forth. So I can see this still being available too in this format, and even for my own committee members, because they're all around the state. Mm-hmm. And someone have to drive maybe up to 3 or 4 hours to get to the stairs, depending on what liberal road they are on outside of the Mass Pike. And, this has become a much more convenient medium to conduct committee member meetings, where we can do educational seminars. I can answer questions. I don't have to tempt them to the state house by buying coffee and donuts, saving a little money in my own pocket. Those kind of things. And even this, during Asian American Pacific Island Month, we held a virtual educational course with Professor Watanabe, Professor Episeme, regarding the history of Asian racism, which was very well received format by members and staff on basically getting a crash course for about 40 minutes with Q&A.
Yeah, it shouldn't be looked down upon. There are definite benefits to it, for sure. I mean, you can never replace an in-person meeting, certainly, but if it's just a matter of a transfer of information or a 10-minute testimony or something, definitely it can work.
Oh, absolutely. And as we know, this is still New England. The weather can be bizarro in the wintertime.
Yep.
A person can't make it up here to meet me on a matter before the committee or the legislature that's out of state, this is a wonderful substitute to be able to do this. And I can see people having meetings with legislators, through the whole day. They can do 30-minute schedules. And this format lets me kind of like keep the schedule to some level.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People that want to talk to us are able to do so. But yeah, I agree with you. I do miss in-person meetings.
Yeah.
I do miss even in-person meetings at home. I've done constituent, they're not house calls anymore because you really can't do that.
Right.
But we meet in the coffee shop, or we meet at one of the meeting rooms in the library, or meeting rooms at City Hall.
Yep.
We do have other, physical locations that are public viewing, because the nature of the world we live in, it's my always preference to be public in a public space for a lot of safety reasons.
Yeah.
I kind of miss doing that too.
Speaking of public spaces, I saw you at Quincy College yesterday.
Yes, Congressman Lynch announced as part of the latest stimulus package, $10 million to Quincy College to be able to help them get through this pandemic. Higher education has been badly hit by the pandemic because not everybody goes to higher education. It's local, right? We all know that. You may have family members that are out of state education, higher ed, and they also had a lot of challenges too. So most folks don't realize there are big three economic drivers in the state. It's number one's healthcare, which has been crippled by COVID-19 because a lot of the optional patient services aren't available. And of course, international local travel has been very challenged. Mm-hmm. So our hospital system has been under a lot of strain over COVID-19 and maintaining COVID-19 preparations, basically about real compensation. The federal government is basically paying for a lot of it. So it's wave number two or three, depending whose math you like to use, this past winter. The rest hospitals were ready, but you know, we wanted a cusp of overflow many times. Yep. In the greater Boston area, and it did overflow in the northern part of the state. So, but if we didn't maintain that continual readiness, it would be much more disastrous, even though we were on the cusp and did overflow in some locales. And then the second, a third economic driver, depending on the math you use, is tourism and higher education. Mm. And the economic drivers that generates through both, because nothing's better when other people come to your state to spend money, right? They're the ones who are going to pay sales taxes and meals taxes and hotel taxes and the taxes on rental cars. And they purchase goods.
Yep.
And that helps businesses here.
And they're utilizing minimal services. So it's a win-win.
I mean, the infrastructure is like the MBTA, right? You know, the taxis, the Ubers, the Lyfts, and the restaurants. So there's not a lot of government investment on those infrastructure. And the university, same thing. They maintain their own infrastructures. And there's about 60,000 students that influxes the state, mm-hmm. you know, from higher ed. And that's 60,000 people that spend money.
Yep.
They go home. We don't have to deal with them at least for 3 months at a time.
Right.
So, and then of course you have graduation, the parents are here, so if they're far away, why not make a full week of it? You know, and so forth. So it affects everything from rental prices to the restaurants, to booksellers, to entertainment venues when the kids aren't here. And we may have some malady coming back this fall. However, we don't know what international vaccination process is like, and that they pay much more money to go to school here than a domestic student. And they are also a huge economic driver of out-of-country money. And of course, tourism includes things like conventions. Like we lost last year the National Guard convention. National Guard was having its annual convention in Massachusetts. We lost that event. And that's a huge national event as the entire National Guards of the U.S. come here. So that'll give you an idea of one major event lost, not including all the small events. And even things like weddings, for example, with a lot of out-of-staters come in, you know, that was lost last year as well. You know, your friends and family come in and spend money locally as part of a visit. And then you get to our next two major economic drivers is seafood, export food, as well as complex machineries. So we don't do cheap manufacturing. We all know that America is not a cheap manufacturing country anymore. But we still have a lot of control over complex machineries like microchips and MRI machines, CT scanners, airplane parts, for example, still manufactured in Massachusetts. So the pandemic actually had an interesting impact on both of them. One is a global economic slowdown, which then things like lobsters, which we used to pay somewhere between $6 and $12, maybe $15, depending on the time of year, right, per pound. You know, they'll pay like five times that overseas.
Wow.
Because you have to get them there. You know, it's hard to transport. You have 24 hours. There's a death rate because even though you transport them properly, some may die en route. And then there's all kinds of excise tax, fees, tariffs, the whole nine yards of destination. So obviously people over there, you know, that have some means, you know, are suffering the same economic crisis. And because of COVID-19, a lot of travel is minimum required travel. So even goods and services going around is, minimum stuff. You're not looking to bring in extras, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've had a challenge exporting our foods, especially seafood, because of the global economy, and cargo planes are transporting PPE and not transporting lobsters. And passenger planes overseas, most people don't realize that a cargo hold isn't just your luggage. It's other goods, including food products. Then complex machinery, as everyone heard, we got the microchip problem.
Right.
Semiconductors in short supply because they've shifted to a lot of devices like we're talking here on my phone.
Yeah.
But also, your latest, greatest toaster has a microchip in there now.
Yeah, it's so, impacted the auto industry too, I know. So, yeah.
Huge impact on the auto industry. So there's a supply chain issue there, which adversely impacts our ability to create these complex machineries for sale, and even airplane parts, right? Nobody's flying. You know, and I don't expect full sky travels for some time, as other countries need to figure out how they're going to deal with visitors, same as we will. I mean, you know, are you coming in vaccinated?
Right.
Do you want to know before you come visit? People need to understand it's not just about us moving around. You don't know where that person's been coming in off that plane. And one of my friends, you know, escaped the UK, for lack of a better term, in the midst of the variant before they shut the whole country down again. They picked up COVID-19 on the way transit between London and Boston. And how do you know? So I do understand, you know, I got my emails today, and we should have vaccine passports, whatnot. But what about other people that come visit? Should they have vaccine passports?
Right. It opens up a whole can of worms that we don't have time to get into now. But yeah, it's certainly a question. Yeah.
But people don't think beyond, you know, just us.
That's right. I mean, I said it before, the virus knows no borders. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So would you like to know people come and visit are safe or not?
Sure. Ideally. Absolutely. Yeah.
Agreed. And that's going to impact, as I said, major economic drivers. It affects our higher education, affects healthcare, affects tourism, affects manufacturing, and affects seafood and other import, export of food products around the state. So, you know, moving out of state. So Canada's our number one tourist partner, along with China and the UK. Of those three countries, China has the most control over the virus, despite the fact they won't, their projection of vaccination fully will not be to 2022. Much bigger country, even though it's a centralized healthcare system, still much bigger country. You know, there's a lot of hesitancy for people to leave that country because they've not been vaccinated.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, their state news systems, you know, obviously don't always say positive things about the world, but regarding COVID tracking numbers, I think every media outlet, regardless if it's private owned or a government owned, is not going to lie about the severity of the situation.
Well, next time we talk, it'll be June.
I know, June and graduation season. I say, no, Quincy High is doing graduation. I will expect my Quincy High invite at some point, because for some reason it's been running a little late. And Father's Day is rolling around, and start of summer vacation is rolling around. And it does feel like a lifetime. But another funny occurrence happened is I didn't realize how it's been a year. Some folks I know have passed away from COVID-19 and non-COVID-19, and been so preoccupied by, you know, taking care of ourselves in Baden, you know, isolation, but also working nonstop, like more than normal. And this is not me going to events all weekend and nights. I mean, this is just the tidal wave of things I got to think and worry about, and constant phone calls and texting and emails, and you know, try to prioritize, you know, what's what. And even unemployment claims will continue. I picked up 5 in 5 days this week. Mm. We were picking up 2 every 5 days, actually 2 every day at one point, including weekends. So, I mean, it's still better, but the need continues to be there.
Speaking of phone calls, emails, good way to get a hold of you, Techie.
As always, 617-722 2014, 617-722-2014. Just smack a button. You get to a staffer's voicemail. They email the voicemails to our, they email the voicemails now. So we don't actually pick it up on by calling it. They just email those.
Right.
You know, you have my email, guys, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. I am now receiving testimony on bills. This house, this system. They actually have a specific email address for people to submit testimony.
Oh, okay.
So the idea is supposed to put some relief on my email box. But that's not actually what happened. I'm still getting all this testimony in my personal email box for work email, personal work email box. Meanwhile, it's going to a separate email box that the committee is supposed to collect testimony in, so we can sort and store them into the server, right? We have to keep these records. So I'm kind of like, what's the point of the separate email system if I'm now drowning in testimony plus constituent email plus the so-called spam email plus invitations. And I'm just like, as you guys are now hearing my frustration about State House information systems, legislative information systems and how they operate. Yeah, you guys have been listening to me moan for a while now about these things. And of course, you know, go to my Facebook page, Jackie Chan State Representative. I've been doing some Shop AIP Month. Had the wonderful pleasure to speaker come around me last week. As well as we put things like CDC graphics up, trying to make it as user friendly as possible for folks to get easy information. And of course, DrChan.org, which again, all the human resources, human service resource phone numbers are on there for the city. So, you know, in case you need to find a phone number, you may be easier to find a website and call me up.
All right. Thanks so much, Jackie.
Take care, Joe. I'll talk to you in a week.
Yes. Happy Memorial Day, and we'll check in June.
Yep. Thank you to all the families who paid out for the sacrifice, too, so we can continue conversations like we're having now.